this is it. Here she goes. She's going to do it.
It's
you
really...
You did it. You watched it.
It's literally me. This is how I feel.
So many holes. Do it. Throw the grenade. Oh, no. It's a bazooka.
Yeah.
Oh. This, I didn't understand why the robot has to be separate from the frame sometimes.
I'll be back.
Oh.
Incredible.
I'll be back.
Incredible. Her over-itness through this whole movie is incredible.
I love her.
She's really Mackenzie.
She was in...
Mackenzie Davis.
Blade Runner also.
As the beautiful woman.
As a hooker who goes in the body of
right,
a hologram.
Right, right. Remember, let's talk about Gabriel Luna and what has he been in?
I don't know, but
he was born on December 5th, 1982, in Austin, Texas.
Younger than me.
He's an actor and producer. Temple Grandin was incredible. I really cried in it.
Really?
But look at Gabriel Luna's incredible, freckled, beautiful face.
You think those are freckles?
Yeah.
What do you think those are?
I thought it was dirt.
All right, let's sit down.
I'll be back.
No, I'll be back. The other one I really like is she goes, and then I drink all day until I black out. That was another line that I really relate to.
Things were sad for her.
Version of Sarah
Connor.
So, and they like do a whole CGI moment of her son getting shot.
Yes.
Like this whole like.
It's kind of.
Because that's not in any
unbelievable. Of them. That they can now just make a movie with people from the past. Like, why not just make a Bette Davis movie or whatever?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you did a Bette Davis movie with me? Or it was like, hey, you. And I was like, hey,
you. You'll be the voice of... And the bot. They'll put you in a green unitard with
spots
points.
On it. Uh-huh. With a bunch of, like, dots on it.
And then they'll
it.
Just make you Bette Davis.
Yeah. It could really happen. Should we sing the song? What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff? Well, you know, the weather doesn't suck.
It's gorging.
It is
today.
Really pleasant. I went out in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
I didn't finish watching. We were watching Terminator Dark Fate. I didn't finish watching it. But you didn't watch Portrait of a Lady on Fire yet, which is why this episode's going to be incredibly short. Because that was
our
plan.
Well, you don't know. You never know. We do have questions from Bobby.
Okay.
So the weekly segment of questions from Bobby.
I
don't even
really
reply
feel like
to him.
Digging my heels in though about this Portrait of a Lady on Fire. You
I'm
know,
really sorry.
I just don't even. I feel like if people haven't seen it yet, it's like what's
I'm gonna
wrong
go.
With you?
I may even go tonight.
I sent you a link to watch it.
I don't want
to
watch it on a computer. I want to watch it on the big screen magic. I want to see the stitches in the dresses.
Oh my God. The clothes, it is so... While I didn't see Whittle Women, I am absolutely sure it is better in, like, 100 million ways.
What better than
Whittle Women? It just is.
I get it.
It's just a better movie.
But Little Women was a real pleasure to look at.
I know you cried over those scenes.
I know. And I saw Emma yesterday, and also that's a real costume movie.
It is. And I haven't even seen the movie yet, and I know I'm Mia Goth in it. I'm absolutely the one who just turns and is like,
You're not her in this movie. She plays the Brittany Murph. What's her name? Remember Brittany from Clueless?
Yeah. That'd be like probably what I'd play in things, no? You think I'm some sort of like arch mean girl?
Yeah, like in Clueless, you would have been the Stacey Dash character.
I don't remember her.
She was the black friend.
Oh, is she like really
She
intense?
Was very matter of fact.
Okay, I think that's you.
Oh, I might be the Stacey Dash. And she doesn't know how to drive. I guess that's me.
That's literally you.
That's me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of not in those movies. I'm in like a movie called Now Voyager with Bette Davis.
You're the redhead in Clueless.
Is she mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
But no. Mia Goth in Emma is...
I'm obsessed with Mia Goth.
Very sweet and kind of a dodo brain.
Her acting chops are really good.
Shh.
You know who's really a good actor?
No.
And I think I've...
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How did we do that?
So,
it's a trope on this
So
podcast.
Jeremy has been like putting on random movies.
Oh my God, Reed, have you seen Heartburn?
Wow, Jeremy just jumped right on in. Right on in, ladies and gentlemen. She
With,
is excited.
With Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Catherine O'Hara.
So great.
It's a really good film.
I know, and it's so New York.
And so strange. I feel like it might be, what's her name's best film?
Nora Ephron.
Yeah, I think it's her best screenplay because it...
Well, it's her story.
It's her story?
Yeah.
Wow, did she make a key lime pie and slap it into her husband's face?
One can only assume. I mean, the part of them in bed eating carbonara is heaven, right?
I was asleep through that part.
Nancy Meyers, like...
trope. Yeah. She loves, like, middle-aged people eating rich food after sex.
I mean, the part... But also the magical realism of when she watches... She's watching a TV show, like Mystery Theater or something, and the host is, like, starts talking about her life. She's watching TV and kind of, like, in a fugue state, eating, like, something out of a pot.
Uh-huh.
And she's crying, and he's like... And then... Her teeny tiny children and her were all alone. You know, it says something like that. And then her dad comes in, who's incredible, who just storms through the apartment, kind it's of not doing though, anything. No? And he's like, she's like, Mom wasn't great. He's like, well, let's be frank.
Have
I wasn't great either.
Have you ever seen an apartment that big?
It's in the Dakota.
It's
enormous. I have been in apartments in New York.
It was so many.
Reed, you have.
I have.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of apartment she had.
Yeah.
There's some article about that.
In the...
Nora?
Isn't it in the Ansonia?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Incredible. And then Rosie O'Donnell moved into that building, and they were neighbors.
Incredible.
And Rosie O'Donnell became a mentor to her gay son.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she was also a mentor to Parker.
Posey?
Mm-hmm.
Nora?
Yeah, because of You've Got Mail. Yeah, and they became friends, and Nora was very mentory for her
that.
As well. I know. It is really nice. That movie's really good. Heartburn's really good.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy put on this movie, which I didn't really watch either of these films, to be clear. I watched the last 20 minutes, really, of Heartburn. I knew when she was making the key lime pie, I was like, she's going to slap that in his face. But it was okay. In Heartburn.
Wait, I have a question. It's related / not related, but on the Upper West Side, there's like outside the apartment building, there's kind of like that corner. And then there's another movie where Allison Janney gets hit by a bus on that corner.
Does she get killed?
And then the rest of the movie is about this girl who's dealing with the guilt of having kind of caused that accident.
I do not know that movie. That's incredible. What a vague description of a film.
It's a real movie. It is very good. We'll figure it out later.
It's a comma tragedy?
It's not a comma.
Oh, it's just tragedy?
It's full trag.
Remember in Red Sparrow when... Mary Louise Parker gets
amazing. That was comma
hit by that van.
This is not that. Oof. This is not that.
It's crazy.
She's watching Allison Janney bleed out.
Like you see her, she's like, "Why did you kill me?"
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Gwyneth.
Jeremy put this movie.
What was in there? Something so creamy.
Oat milk.
It really
did. You like that?
Has that like tongue coating buttery thing.
Well,
that,
I put a lot of oat milk in it for you. So Jeremy put on this movie called Valentino.
It's called Moonlight and Valentino.
With Gwyneth Paltrow.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen.
Turner?
Turner.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh.
Bon Jovi.
The posters are coming to me.
And
Elizabeth Perkins.
And Elizabeth Perkins.
Yes, I've never
Elizabeth
seen
Perkins
it.
Plays Gwyneth's sister. Gwyneth smokes through the entire movie.
Bon Jovi's like a painter.
Uh-huh.
He
house painter.
Walls. I have seen this, but it's like a... I saw it on cable TV.
At your mother's,
yes,
like,
and I
shed.
Don't remember it, but I do remember Bon Jovi was topless. Was
I
he?
Don't remember when if he gets topless, because there's another movie Bon Jovi's going to do, I believe, around this time that I might be making up. Called Something in Roses, but I could be making it up.
Bed of Roses?
Uh-huh.
Christian Slater.
Oh.
Christian Slater. Yeah.
Oof.
And the other three named woman from
Remember
Benny
Christian
and June.
Slater in that gay porn movie?
Uh-huh.
King Cobra?
Cobra King.
He was incredible in that.
He was good.
Yeah, Christian Slater's great.
What's the other three named woman from Benny and June?
Oh, yeah.
Mary Stuart Masterson.
Yeah.
She's
my
Bed of Roses.
Friend.
She's Bed of Roses. With Christian Slater.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on. Moonlight and Valentino.
Gwyneth Paltrow is incredible.
How many times do I have to say it for the last 5 years?
Well, look, you just had to keep saying it. I've always had a resentment about Shakespeare in Love. Because that year was Hillary and Jackie. And that
I understand.
Award should have gone to Emily...
Watson.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I know it's hard because there's Emma. Watson,
yeah,
who's trash garbage Hermione.
Right.
But then there's Emily, who's incredible.
Who's truly one of the greatest living actresses.
Yeah.
And her, have you seen Hillary and Jackie?
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't, like
Rachel Griffiths also. Amazing.
That is her name, isn't it?
The sister.
Yeah. That movie in and of itself is incredible.
Whoever the guy is who plays Daniel Barenboim is amazing.
That movie is incredible. It's up there in one of my like top 20.
It's a good one.
And she should have won. But
is
you know,
that the movie where Rachel Griffiths is in the car when she finds out her sister's died? And she just stops in the middle of the road in Europe and gets out.
It's like I could start crying about this movie. There's a few movies I've sobbed that hard in, and part of it was this. I don't want to ruin it for you who haven't seen it, but like the kind of trick.
Literally a true story.
Right, there's a trick in the movie, you know, where it's like, whatever, I'm just going to say it. People can watch it.
It is 20 years old.
You think you're watching, you know, you're watching this movie and you're like, oh, wow, she's really awful. And then all of a sudden the movie stops and starts over and you see it from someone else's perspective.
Right.
And I have chills on the left side of my body about it. Like the way this, and just this movie about these sisters and their competition and their life, and then the demise of one of them through MS, who's gonna not be able to play anymore. And Emily, remember when she's sitting trying to play in this empty apartment? She's alone at this point and she can't. Mm. And you just watch her cry in this empty apartment. And it was like, I can't. It was incredible. Anyhow, as we know, the Oscars are trash and they, you know, didn't even mention the best movie this past year, which is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. So, you know, whatever.
But here's the thing. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is in theaters now.
But it came out in time. We went over this last episode. Gwyneth Paltrow smokes her way through this movie. She's always smoking and she does this scene where with the woman who plays her sister. It's just not that great, so I can't keep remembering. Elizabeth Perkins, where she has to get naked and be like, am I okay? Do I look okay? She's never looked at her body. And it's was such a precursor. The acting she did, I was like, Claire Danes. She looks exactly the same and does exactly things that you'll watch Claire do later.
Mm.
And then it got me thinking, and I'm sure this has happened. They've been in a movie together, right?
Claire and Gwyneth?
Uh-huh.
Hmm. It seems logical, like a sister's kind of moment, but I don't know. I don't know. Are you telling me a fact or are you asking a question?
I don't know.
Because maybe they're too similar.
And then I think about Gwyneth and I think about Goop and I'm just here for her now.
Here's the thing. I really believe she was primed to be like the Meryl Streep of her generation. And then, but she wasn't interested or ambitious enough because she came from it.
Mm.
Whereas Meryl,
I'll do this Wes Anderson.
Meryl was self-made and was really like, I'm going to be famous. And Gwyneth was like, oh, they gave me an Oscar.
I know, but I also remember another resentment I had, just I read this article with her, but you know, interviews
She's
are tough.
She's part of the Harvey Weinstein saga, right?
Gwyneth? Oh, did she stop getting parts because of him? It's possible.
Possible.
Yeah.
Ugh, gross. Anyhow. But I also remember reading an interview where they were like, you know, it was on the Late Show where they're like, you know, dad, Bruce Paltrow, mom,
Blythe Danner,
any luck here? And she said, luck? I get up at 5 a.m. to go get in hair and makeup to shoot for 12 hours a day. I wouldn't really call that luck. And I was like, well,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, she wouldn't have arrived where she arrived, but like, it's clear that she works hard. Like
she works hard and she is incredible.
Excellent actress.
She's incredible. She's really, really good. I'm here for her and I'm here for Goop. I've been doing my Wim Hof breathing exercises and taking cold showers.
Do you feel better?
Well, I don't know.
Do you have more endurance?
I don't feel cold. Like I used to feel cold all the time.
Do you hear that, everybody?
And now I'm kind of like, I'm all right. I feel a little sturdier. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Jeremy cannot stand him. Can't stand his voice. Can't stand
Wim Hof.
He's
horrible.
I adore him.
Oh, he's horrible.
I would absolutely go and study with him and be like, I believe everything you're saying.
He's a predator.
I'll do it all. He is not.
That's what it feels like.
Hmm. Well, I want him to be my dad. Look, don't get it twisted. If Wim Hof wanted to kiss me, I'd say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. He's so like, it's life. Breathe it in. And I'm like, you know, taking a drag of a cigarette, being like, cool.
I mean, he was attractive, an attractive sort of man as a young
He's attractive
person.
Now.
For some.
Yeah, well, his endurance, what have you. I just really like that he's like, don't push yourself, but push yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Emma, in the movie, Emma does a really mean thing at one point that made
it's
me want to be less mean.
Did you never read the book? You've never read it? Have it's you ever like read a Jane Austen book?
No.
Because you are a Jane Austen book. You know, it's like you don't need to read it because you literally... are it.
I read...
Like, I don't I need read, to read Jane Bowles because I am Jane Bowles.
I read, you know, an Emily Bronte. I read the...
Sure, sure.
Jane well, Eyre.
That's our Venn, really.
Darkness.
We mix at Wuthering Heights.
I mean, watching Emma...
What was that? What's that? You mean the... With her friend?
No, she's at a picnic, and then she says something really nasty to, like, this auntie kind of person mm-hmm. who's very annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But she says something sort of completely dismantling to this person. Mm-hmm. And this person is inherently kind. They're just annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And Gwyneth is just like, it's like how you never shut up, basically, to her.
Oh, you're talking about with Gwyneth, not the one you just
No, it is. Okay, right. I said Gwyneth, but I meant that girl with the crazy face. And it was so heartbreaking. Like, I wept because this woman, this actress's reaction was so unbelievable.
Mm.
Like, how hurt she was. Yeah. She was just like, and I was like, wow, can't be that mean to people.
Well, you could work on that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of an inherent nature of yours. So it'll be an interesting thing to see if you can kind of catch. Yeah. And it's this thing, too, where... I don't quite know that you mean it mean.
No, sometimes it's funny, but it's mean.
Yeah, but also sometimes I don't know that you're saying it with malice. I think you might just be like, well, that's what it is. You're dumb. You know, like...
I wouldn't ever tell someone they're dumb. No. I'm too sensitive about that. Being dumb myself.
No. Well, I've definitely experienced some things where it's like, yeah, but kind of like that. You're like... Well, that's dumb. You're dumb. You know, but in this way where you think people will laugh with you, but it can feel a little stingy. It's all right. You grew up in New York and your mom also really calls it like it is.
I do come from a family of people who get themselves in trouble in that way.
Really?
Aunt Jane. Right? Yeah, I think she like, you know, struggled with work from time to time for really putting people in their place on movie sets.
Good for her. Yeah, you know, I gotta say, like, there's so much entitlement flying around there. It's just a real...
She told me a story of how some grip on a movie set or TV show set came up to her one day and started complaining about the craft services.
Uh-huh.
And this was a movie where they had, like...
Lobster.
Everything.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Everything. Like, right. Multiple venues for food.
Yeah.
And she just, as the guy was complaining, she kept going, what? As if she couldn't hear him. She'd be like... What?
That's good.
And then at a certain point, she was just like, oh, I'm so sorry. I couldn't hear you over the sizzle of the omelet bar.
Yay. That's good. I think that's good. I think that's great. I'm here for that. That's, you know, more of that. You know, what about like just, I mean, and then there's like real positive ways about it, right? That we're in it right now, like Elizabeth Warren Unleashed. Like, you know,
my God.
No holds bars. It's really like, you know what? But it's hard now that
I don't actually like Democrats being horrible to each other. I think it's not productive. There's a story on The Daily right now about this union in Las Vegas that's very powerful. And they worked for 6 years in a strike to get incredible health insurance, uh-huh. The culinary union. And they're like, we can't elect Bernie because he'll take away our private health insurance and we'll have to have socialized health insurance. And they are basically acting as a kind, I don't know how to say this, but they're like, they're being very bad in a way, trying to manipulate all of their members to like vote in a certain way. And you're like, that's not how this system should work.
Right.
Anyways, I don't.
That's how it works. And Bernie, you know, got like 50% of Nevada, so it's fine.
Okay. Everything's okay. Jeremy says,
well, I mean, it's like okay and not okay. I mean, I also. Well,
I think everyone fighting to make their point is really important. And it's something that like gets Democrats in trouble all the time, yeah. Where everyone's trying to like be nice.
I guess,
and then it all falls apart.
In my mind right now, it's just like such a war on Trump that it's hard to see the people on one side fighting amongst each other. But I guess that will end soon.
It will. And then it's going to be a real like dig in.
Yeah, I'm here for the war on Trump. It's just a little hard to see mm-hmm. like people with more reasonable values fighting amongst each other.
But that's how teams get strong.
Get strong?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Someone's been doing their work over
well,
here.
Well, Jeremy, really.
Think about like athletics or like the military. Like the strength is built on your own in your own team.
Right.
And then you go to war with other people.
Yeah.
If you're all like, okay, let's just
be nice,
picnics and relax over here.
That's all I want to do.
Know, it's part of like the cheer conversation well, too.
I mean, right? You know, talk about that right. Swapping in and out. Right.
Monica with her MBAs.
We can get back to cheer in a moment.
Did you see those photos of her with her hand on Morgan's puss?
Excuse me.
They were like in a step and repeat for some show, Ellen no. or whatever, or like the awesome. I don't know. They were somewhere in clothes and.
Somewhere and in clothes.
They were well, no so. In clothes, fancy clothes. Outclose, and then huh? Monica was like literally had her hand like right in front of Morgan, like on her crotch, like being not like she didn't mean to do that, but it just is what it was. And I was like, that's right.
I don't understand. For we'll what? Find the image. Was Monica, I mean, was Morgan wearing a sheer dress?
She was wearing a gown or something.
Uh-huh.
And Monica just wanted to like make contact, you know?
Oh.
Yeah. So she's obsessed with Morgan.
Morgan is, I think, my favorite.
You're
right?
Obsessed
that's
with Morgan.
That's the one I'm obsessed with. Well, because we're like, drama. Someone has to adopt her now.
Wait a second. I wanted to look at questions from Bobby for a second. I don't think they're cheer related, but.
Oh. Okay, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. Okay, hi,
hello,
ladies.
Welcome.
Hi,
welcome.
Hi, it's ladies. Another. We're here. Hi, we're here.
It's
okay,
Reed
so
and Jack.
Yeah, you need to go to iTunes.
Have you heard of iTunes?
Go there.
It's
and we need
a,
you to rate.
What would you call it?
Comment.
It's a storage thing for music and sound. You're going to go to iTunes and you're going to go to Dance and Stuff Podcast.
And rate and comment.
And you also have to subscribe, absolutely.
And subscribe. And because the more comments we get, the more listeners we get, and then the more people you can talk about this podcast with.
Also,
don't forget that we are still on YouTube. We have a bunch of videos we made. Go check them out. And
not
also,
only made, you can also watch videos we like.
Yeah, that's true. You can also watch videos that we like. Also, we have a Patreon. Please consider supporting us. And
and I would say, here's my recommendation, knowing the demographic of our supporters, uh-huh. Cap it off at $5. Don't think that you need to give us any more than $5, because if all of you gave us $5, we would build the Dance and Stuff Center for Podcast Education upstate.
Tea,
so
honey, tea.
This is basically our Kickstarter, like Marina Abramovic.
Except we'll follow through.
Thank yous.
Okay,
so. We have a question from Bobby.
Uh-huh.
So this is our question from Bobby this week, which starts out with a kind of comment. The dance okay. world seems to be quiet these days. However, there is a new dynamic that seems to be taking off. Some artistic directors are trying to be more friendly approach to their director to artist relationships. Maybe it's because I'm older and have more experience and I've worked with a variety of directors, but I think directors should just be directors and lead respectfully. Leading with the idea of friendship or family creates a false narrative, in my opinion. What do you think? How does Jack conduct himself as a creative leader?
Mm.
And then, we'll talk about that. But then another mm-hmm. question is, are you excited for your upcoming premiere coming to, that's okay. No, okay. We'll talk about that later. Anyways. So you can speak on that. I mean, I thought that was hilarious.
Well, I mean, cause I'm not really an artistic director. I'm a maker.
Right.
So, and the way that I make my work is in process So while I'll be, I always also feel so grateful or when people were working with me because there was very little money. It was clearly not jobs about money and fame. So that people were up for and excited to spend time with me around my vision made me feel always intensely grateful to have them in the room. So I think and having been a performer myself and having worked with some people who I found to be abusive, I never wanted that dynamic in the room. I always wanted the opposite of that dynamic. As well as I worked with people who were super self-serious and seemed to think that what they were doing was, you know, almost like brain surgery or akin to something so just lethally important that really always would drain the energy of the room and kind of not make good work.
Yeah.
And I found it to make really sort of indulgent work. And so I definitely create a zone of, I think, where people feel very supported, very held in a space where they could do anything, where they could say anything, allow them. I mean, there's so many things in rehearsal that someone has done I feel you and I have made pieces where you've done something and I've been like, oh, that has to stay in. That's right. Been like a joke or something.
Well, there's not like a pressure in your rehearsals in terms of time, because often like an enormous part of the time is just taken up in conversation.
Right.
And not like in conversation about the work, just in conversation with each other about our lives.
Well, and what I've wanted, and part of what I always wanted from that was to create a sense of intimacy with the company so that when you would watch the work, it would feel that these people had, that this, whatever it is you're watching and had been going on for a really long time.
Yeah.
And that there's some real strange depth to these relationships that you may or may not fully know, but want to know. And right. I think I was the first person who really enchanted me into that was Terry O'Connor. I mean, seeing Frozen Mommy and seeing these performers interact with each other in a way that felt really different for me than Pina or other sort of, I guess, more famous forms of dance theater, where it felt like there was this real connection with the performers that really led me in. It made me want to watch them and find out what they were doing.
When there's more people and there has to be more infrastructure and like more of like a company environment, then I think it is important that like the leadership be somewhat more like removed personally from the dancers. Because I've worked with directors, like when I was in the Alberta Ballet, with someone who so desperately wanted to have personal friendships with the dancers, and it was totally inappropriate and went totally awry. It was
insane. Is that the artistic director or the choreographer?
He was both. He was the artistic director and made many of the dances.
I mean, I guess that the sort of where I would see that more is, yes, in a larger company format, especially one that is with that many people, where I think it would be really hard to have everyone feel cared for.
Right.
Once it starts to tip into like 20, you know, and above, which any ballet company, of course, is going to, that's when, if you're being friends with people, it might be very specific to the principals, the soloists, or whoever is your Morgan, to speak of sort of how the Monica might work out in a situation
the
like
favorites.
That. And that feels, in this other way, sort of more of the same sort of boundary that I think needs to happen inside of teaching, or where it's, you're giving people this form, you're asking them to push themselves, but if it starts getting into friendship and favoritism, then they also can slack off and all sorts of things that I think could become, that could go awry and something like that.
Yeah. Anyways, that was the answer to Bobby's question of the week.
And I think we answered it.
I think it was good. Artistic directors of companies need to not have personal friendships with their dancers. It doesn't work.
I think that ends up becoming pretty hard.
Yeah, Bobby agrees.
Though I can really understand wanting to have that.
Yes, of course.
But that is that's a level of intimacy that would need to happen with a more intimate company.
Right. I mean, whatever. Peter Martin certainly was cultivating an environment of friendship with certain kinds of dancers in that company, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, but that's because it was also not just cultivating ideas of friendship.
Right.
And it was a lot of other things that I would not term friendship.
No. I saw a show the other day. This is interesting. That initially, like the first half hour, I was like, oh, I'm going to recommend this to Jack and Jeremy. They should go see this. And then I was like, if I can't leave soon, I'm going to kill myself.
Do you feel you can say what it was? Or would you rather not?
I won't.
Okay.
It was from Europe. Mm. And it was a show that was like very kind of messy and beautiful.
I think I know what it is.
And it started with these this incredible imagery. Mm. And it was kind of wild and a little bit improvisatory, but like the imagery of it and the energy of it was strong enough to carry it through the performance part of it. Mm-hmm. And then the performance part of it ended, which I was really here for. Like they did things that I was like, that's tremendous. Mm-hmm. The costuming was so smart. Mm-hmm.
I think I know it is. Very, and with a sense of like kind of abandon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also like, it had been very...
rigorous.
Yeah, rigorously
yeah.
thought through yeah. because it was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then the show stopped and started to become a PowerPoint presentation about the show. And I uh-huh. thought, oh, this is going to now devolve into irony or something. Uh-huh. And it didn't. Uh-huh. It literally was a lecture demonstration about their references. Uh-huh.
And they wanted to prove all their research and dramaturgy that they'd done for something that was fun and had spectacle.
As if
they
we
wanted
were
to make
so
sure,
stupid
right.
that we hadn't already seen their references mm-hmm. or that we cared enough mm-hmm. and were distrustful enough mm-hmm. to need to know every reference that mm-hmm. they'd used in the making of this work. Mm-hmm. Many of which felt very tenuous at best, where you're like, that's a reference for this dance.
Sure, sure.
Hardly.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was beside myself.
Why didn't you leave?
I was because of where I was. It wasn't a situation, unless I'm Yvonne Rainer, where I right. can say, excuse me, is this the end of the show? May I go?
And were you seated?
Visibly.
You were, okay.
Yes. Right. Quite visibly. Mm. It was so upsetting. Mm. So it was exactly the thing that I hate the most. Which followed a thing that I like very much.
And break that down. What is the thing, people who listen to this podcast now, what is the thing you hate the most?
I hate people explaining their work to me. Mm. I hate
on
it.
On stage.
unless they're on making stage. A joke of it.
Right, yeah.
And also, if you absolutely need to share your references, mm. give people the option of having a pamphlet at the end or whatever.
Sure, well, generally that is where you put your dramaturgical footnotes, is what we used to call them back in my day. And it can just be in the program.
And they also seemed almost to be begrudgingly delivering this information as if they were like, the only way that we get funding is by giving this lecture demonstration after that show so that we're validated academically.
Well, I think that brings up a really interesting point and something that I feel I've certainly been attacked about is the use of pleasure and play and fun in performance mm-hmm. and the way it is derided critically. And especially when you go into zones, especially if there's queerness and femininity.
It was that.
That's when that grouping gets attacked so hard critically by just these femme-phobic misogynists, really. And it's and so then there has to be this, or it seems like then the rebuttal comes like, well, I will prove to you this thing where, you know, and I said this when we did the AIDS World History Project, I quoted when Justin Bond called me after I got some nasty review and she said, you know, if they don't take us seriously, why should we?
Right.
But I thought at that time, And I do feel that when I say, but we want to be taken seriously. And play is a political act in a culture of disdain. And we couldn't be in more of that culture of watching this rise of this crazy right happen globally. It's not just in America that we're dealing with this right, neo-Nazi, misogyny, like racism, all of it kind of having its swing back. So I think it's unfortunate that artists don't feel that they can have that pleasure in play.
Right. And I mean, particularly in New York and with a downtown audience, I was like, you're wasting our time. You're wasting our time. At a certain point, they said, we discovered at a certain point someone that none of you have heard of named Fred Herko. And I was like,
whoops.
We all have. Can we go?
Yeah.
This is insane.
Literally made a piece about him.
I was like, this is psychotic that this audience is being forced to listen to this.
Well, and then that's also really interesting. That's interesting to me, too, about European presentation and clearly the rift that's even going on there, where they're like, oh, none of you here would have heard of this person when we just did a Fred Herko. There were talks. There was the symposium. Joshua Lubin Levy had that whole thing happen. I know, but even when we did our show, when we did Nightlight Bright Light, Joshua Lubin Levy had organized that thing around that. And the person writing Fred Herko's biography was in town. I met with him. He was lecturing all over here. So that what's interesting inside of that is like, well, you did this research, but not about where you're coming, which is New York, which is where Fred Herko lived and worked. And many people have written about him, and many of us have read about him and seen work that you haven't seen of him.
I'm just like, keep it to yourself.
Right.
This is insane. It was such a waste of time.
Well, and to me, I find it a really interesting problem, because I can't, in hearing about this and I think, and I didn't see the show part because I heard about this element of it. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to stand that. And I feel for them though, that they feel they need to do that inside of a funding structure that is also very different than America. We don't have funding structures here.
Well,
we have a very like, good luck.
Their show has toured for 5 years. So
great.
There you go. Shocking and part of it good.
And I think what is interesting, if one even cared to read what has been written about it, is it might be compelling to see what critics really respond to that second act positively. Where they're like, and then they've done wonderful research to buoy up this flimsy blah blah blah, you know.
Well, some people would prefer a TED talk to a performance.
Hideous, or truly.
Well, a lot of people. Well, because a lot of people want they want you to have the proof in it. They want there to be this sort of like. Because they don't.
There is no proof in art and performance.
Thank you. I was just about to get there. You know, there's this great.
Proof of what?
Hi, honey.
Frankly.
There's this great Oscar Wilde quote, which is, all art is immoral. And I think we're still in this thing of these antique historians looking to like moralize this thing, of which they're terribly immoral about, but want to pretend that they can loft it into something, into the academy, thereby framing it and saying, this is its worth, period. Mm-hmm. Instead of, sorry, queen, art is mystery making. Art is feelings and fantasy, storytelling and myth. Mm-hmm. And but people get freaked out and they're like, but money.
Well, it does feel like the full takeover of capitalism.
Yes.
Like, okay, you need to, you know,
prove it.
The product's dimensions and get a price tag on it, and everything has to be
right.
Clear and validated.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was the show I saw.
I saw a really great show.
Really?
Last night. And as Jeremy pointed out, anytime I see something where I don't want to kill myself after it, it's like...
Must have been good.
It's a real feat. Dustin Wills, who's the director for Boys Company that I'm doing with Jeremy, directed a student production at Juilliard.
Jeremy O'Harris.
Jeremy O'Harris, yes, thank you. I feel like...
Not Jeremy Jacob.
Not my Jeremy, right. Jeremy O'Harris, that Dustin is the director for Boys Comedy Presents, and he said, come see, I'm doing this adaptation, and Keith Radin adapted this Bulgakov play Black Snow, and come see it. And I, Bulgakov wrote Master Margarita. That's, I think, a more famous one. Never Anyhow, it's fine. So, Russian stuff. So, we go to Juilliard to see a play, which I haven't done since...
Long time.
I had friends in at Juilliard in, like, the late 90s. Mm. I remember going to see, like, Cherry Orchard, because I had, like, friends who were in it. And we went, and his direction of it was so great. Mm. And I was really... just the speed, the pleasure of it, this, you know, and it was a student production. So the some students were better than others. And well, also the Juilliard,
cream of the crop.
Well, the Juilliard gamut's really extreme. You have some who like just got out of like Interlochen, and then some who are like 36. So it also is this really kind of interesting company in that way. It made me so excited to start working with him. I love you, Dustin, and I'm really excited for us to start working together and more than we already have and these workshops we've done. And it made me think of the tediousness of West Side Story and this full...
Ben Brantley really didn't let them have it.
Oh, he liked it?
No.
He didn't give
it to them. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, he didn't dig in on them.
No, he gave them a terrible review.
Oh, okay. Letting them have it, I feel, is giving someone a terrible review.
Let them get away with it.
Right. He didn't...
It was interesting in terms of this play I watched last night, and it's familiar to some directors I've worked with, and my own ideas around, you're in theater, we're here, this is a device, play both. Hmm. Play that you are, yes... You're a performer and you're going to have to get through these tasks and it's a play, so continue on with that. And it made me think of the sort of the weirdness then of West Side Story where you're being filmed, really be in it, but never believable, never feeling like it's actually happening, no risk because there's these giant projections happening all the time and these...
He didn't like it.
Yeah.
But I do think he didn't... He doesn't understand dance well enough to like have spoken really on the dances. So he just was like, no.
Oh.
But he liked America, the America dance.
Who choreographed that?
Well, Anna Teresa, but in conjunction with Sergio Trujillo.
Okay, right.
But he wasn't going for the dances.
Yeah, I was.
His explanations were fine.
Yeah, I didn't read his review. It was more sort of a thing of, if you don't like theater or you hate it, how do you want to deal with that? And which I guess was sort of what I was curious in the show. It's like, do you kind of hate theater? Do you want to make a movie? Do you not trust what theater can do?
Yeah, why doesn't Ivo van Hoof make movies?
He should. I hope. I mean, maybe that's what he should do. I mean, and you've heard it here. Like, I have loved his opening night. It's still one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
It's odd. Yeah.
I don't think if you make theater like that you don't care about theater or movies.
Mm.
Like, I think about Bergman, who did a lot of, he had a, you know, stage company as well.
Yeah.
Like, he knew what the theater could do, and he knew what movies could do.
Right.
Yeah.
And he made them.
You know what I don't like?
What?
Multimedia. I don't.
I guess I'm not really here for either.
I don't like when people say, like, immersive this, immersive that. I'm like, oh, just because you think everyone is too stupid or too bored to actually sit through something real. Right.
It's also, I think, that people fail. There's something of, like, shiny objects and not actually doing the work of making a good show with the multimedia. If you're going to, like, bring in, you know, 30-foot-tall video projections, you're going to have to figure out how to actually do that well.
I was at one of the Anthony Roth Costanzo dinners recently, and this question was posed, like, how can we move opera into the 21st century in a way that will, like, actually be engaging and appropriate for a modern audience, blah, blah, blah. And someone was really like, you have to, like, bring everything in. There has to be video, and you have to bring for a modern audience. And I was like, No, that's actually just like diluting the power of opera, which is good. Like if you look at old opera and the content, it's tremendous, the amount of rigor, and the product is so incredible. Mm. The problem is that really good operas need to be written, and the audience is not going to change, quite frankly.
Right.
Like, old rich people saw opera in the past, and old rich people are going to see opera now.
Right.
And you think that by totally ruining the art form through multimedia and immersion or whatever, you're going to, like, make it better? No, you're going to bring in some, like, fashion hipster crowd and make it worse. It's going to be a bad, ugly, stupid product.
You mean the people making are the fashion hipster crowd, not the people
going?
No,
I think the fashion hipster crowd are the people who will go.
Will go, uh-huh.
They will take pictures of it. They'll put it on their Instagram, right, and they will say, this is so cool. Isn't this cool?
Well, there's also that thing that, you know, I think we started to see not long ago where it's in performance where it's made for Instagram. Like, the event itself is really secondary. The product, whether the person knows it or not, is being made for Instagram. Right. And so that it can jettison out and hopefully get like 20,000 views in probably an under a minute clip. But then that can propel someone to like, you know, getting a thing in the MoMA or whatever. It is this thing around capitalism and glitz and all of that, which I think is, I know I've talked about it before and it's boring, but when Peter Brook wrote The Empty Space, this idea of like, well, what can theater do that film can't? And it's this idea of play and magic that is actually about these human live connections happening on stage.
Right. Everyone's so accustomed to like millions of edits and like lights, camera, action that like, you as young people need to be forced to sit in a chair and look at one thing for a while. And I don't think that that's unreasonable. And I think that's a good training for your life.
Well, and so, when you see Portrait of a Lady on Fire, the level of restraint, the level of like not throwing a million and one object at you to, it's just, wow. Incredible. I mean, and speaking of Bergman, it's interesting to think of that as well, of someone who in their filmmaking made such, I've never seen a Bergman play, so I can't speak to that, but who made such eloquent and rigorous and specific choices. And then I can only imagine what the theater part would have been like. Anyways, so
one of the best shows that I saw recently was that I was sitting in the audience in the orchestra at State Theater waiting for Justin's rehearsal to start. And while I was waiting
for rehearsal,
Sarah Mearns and Adrian Danchig-Waring were doing a run through of the second movement of In G Major, which is a Robbins ballet, while crew people were changing over light schemes behind them. In the back. Incredible. So very quietly to like this piano, the word has left my mind, but basically like piano breakdown of this Ravel second movement of this piano concerto, which is very long. It's like a 10 to 15 minute section. They just quietly rehearse this dance, which is so amazing. And that was the best show I saw recently.
That sounds incredible.
Wonderful.
And, you know, and then if we're to break that down, there's just some real key things in that I actually think will heal people. Intimacy, mystery, a sense of magic in reality, a dualism of labor. I mean, come on, people.
It was so beautiful.
Read a book, but don't put it on stage. You can find out those things of what could really work in shows by reading it. Some things, but you don't need to, you know, is it for the stage or is it for the page, honey?
Anyways, go to City Ballet this week to see In G Major and the new Justin Peck that we designed.
Well, I want to see it the way you just said, though.
It was let me heaven. Get,
yeah.
Really I can't believe
bring
it.
Bring a tear to my eye just hearing about it. Yeah.
Anyways.
Oh, that's right. If you're Justin Peck premiere, it'll be out by the time people hear this.
It's on the same program as In G Major.
Great.
So you can see it all at once.
Great.
I don't know what else is on the show, but I'll find out soon.
There was something else. Oh, yeah. Do you feel anxious about the coronavirus?
No.
Okay.
Because even if I got it, I'd live.
You think?
Yep.
Why?
Most people don't die.
Right.
And so we're strong.
Uh-huh.
We'd be fine. We'd be fine. Okay. Just like getting the flu.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Austin Goodwin put on his Instagram like this like sour face thing, and then he added like 100 different texts to it. And one of them was like, this is my face finding out that exhaustion is one of the symptoms of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I was like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was feeling very, you know, okay, sure, whatever. And then a friend of mine, who's puppy I'm going to babysit as a trial run.
Practice.
Exactly.
It's like having one of, like an egg with a face drawn on it to practice being a parent.
We did that as kids, didn't we?
I didn't.
But didn't we?
I saw it on TV.
What?
Like TV high school.
TV high school.
Where you like team up as parents and you have to take care of an egg and not break it.
Did someone drop it?
I don't know.
I think we had an episode of
Strangers of the Candy.
Strangers of the Candy, where
that sounds right.
Her and Little Nut have to take care of a baby, and she gets like a mean. She becomes like a
really
mean alcoholic, abusive husband.
Yeah.
Likes little, and like takes Tammy Little Nut to a motel. She's like, "You're
that's
gonna stay in here."
She goes, "Tamala, I'll never hurt you."
Like yeah, it is something like that.
I'll never hurt you.
And I was found, and then she, you know, it's not too hard to stoke the flames of my hypochondria. And she was like, "Are you worried about it?" And I was like, "No." And she's like, "Well, I mean, Iran, Italy, South Korea." And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "You know, now we can't track where it's coming from. It's, so it is really, it is really pandemic." And I was like,
"Who is this?"
It's a friend of mine. I'm not going to do call out culture on this.
Uh-huh.
And then I just couldn't help myself, and I opened the news, and I thought about, did you ever see Contagion with Gwyneth Paltrow? What an exceptional start to a movie.
That's one where she dies instantly?
Pretty much.
Yeah, like, Matt Damon is her husband.
She, like, goes to a restaurant and shakes hands with someone and dies.
Yeah.
And Kate Winslet is, like, holed up in a hotel towards the end. I think she dies, too. I don't know. I couldn't watch it because I was too afraid. So I only saw bits and pieces in the way that, like, I would have, if someone told me about Saw or some movie, I was like, well, I'm not going to watch that.
No.
And then I, maybe it's like, well, I'll just like watch like a clip and be like, oh, I'm not going to watch that. The beginning of Contagion, you know, it's just black. It's like just black and around you in the theater. I remember Josh Lubin Levy being like, you can't see it. And I was like, why? He's like, because the opening sound is around you in the theater of people coughing.
Oh.
And I was like, mm-mm. And then I think it opens, the first shot is the subway.
Oh, wow.
Mm-mm.
This is your life.
Mm-hmm. I can't handle it. I was like, should I just go upstate and like wait it out?
We don't have it here.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I might have it right now.
I know this, that you have this swollen gland and now you feel a head cold.
It's a traditional cold.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time you had this kind of cough and like I saw you and you're like, hi, and you give me a kiss in my mouth. Just like to say hi. Yeah, this was years ago. We were on our way to meet your father for your birthday. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget that evening. And I was like, are you sick? And you're like, a little bit. And we like had some cough and sniffles and I got so sick after it. Like 3 weeks. It was something like for you it was like Teflon, but for me, like stuck in my system, uh-huh. Like a thorny briar, just
you
endless.
Asked it too psychologically.
I did
you're
not.
Like, weed is making me sick.
I did not. Did we answer all of Bobby's questions? Did Bobby ask us anything else about like food or anything?
I think he.
No, okay, Bobby.
Did you hear about the director of Alberta Ballet leaving? No, I did not. But good riddance.
So we talked about performance, we talked about life, and
that's movies.
That's it.
We talked about Bobby.
Yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to rate, subscribe, like, comment on iTunes.
Yes, the comments are important. We need comments.
Yeah.
And I met someone at a lovely dinner at my friend Cassie and Jesse's this week, named Kyle, who decided to listen to our podcast after I spoke to him, and he said, wow, you have so many comments
on iTunes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so we need more because yeah. we need this to just,
no, what he said is, oh, your reviews are so kind. And I thought he was talking about how we review things on the pod. And I thought, like, maybe.
But no, he meant the reviews of the show. That's nice. Well, whatever. Comment. And we loves you.
Bye.